Monday on The Voice of America.
This is VOA News reporting by remote. I'm Michael Brown. The U.S. Justice Department has broken its silence after this week's FBI search of former President Donald Trump's Florida home. AP Washington correspondent Sagar Magani reports.
After announcing his department wants the Mar-a-Lago search warrant unsealed,
this is all I can say at this time.
Attorney General Merrick Garland said that's what the law and fairness dictate. GOP Senator Lindsey Graham, a Trump ally, says when it comes to the ex-president, fairness doesn't exist.
Is it plausible the FBI would investigate President Trump without merit? Yes.
Saying Garland must explain exactly why the search happened.
And you may have a good reason, but there is so much suspicion out there.
Texas Congressman Troy Nails is more blunt.
They want to destroy this guy.
Telling the AP it doesn't really matter what a corrupt Justice Department says.
They lie to the American people.
Sagar Magani, Washington.
Power was restored in downtown Toronto on Thursday after an outage left the offices of Canada's top businesses in the dark, forced the evacuation of one of the city's biggest shopping malls, and trapped people in elevators. Hydro One, Ontario's biggest electric distribution center, said a barge moving a crane hit three high-voltage transmission lines, causing damage to equipment at a power station. Toronto is Canada's biggest city and its financial capital, and the Central Business District is home to the country's largest bank, insurers, and the stock operator. The power failure comes just over a month after the glitch at Rogers Communications crippled telecom services for a large number of users and services across Canada for nearly 19 hours. This is VOA News. Wildfires continued to spread through France, Spain, and Portugal on Thursday as record-breaking heat waves plagued Europe, prompting the head of the European Space Agency to demand immediate action on climate change. A monster wildfire has destroyed thousands of hectares in the Gironde region area of southwest France, and more than 1,000 firefighters have struggled to control the blazes, which has forced about 10,000 people from their homes. An armed man is dead after a shootout with authorities in the U.S. state of Ohio. Get more on the story from Lisa Dwyer.
Ohio State Patrol spokesman Lieutenant Nathan Dennis says an armed man who tried to breach the FBI's Cincinnati office was shot and killed by police after he fled the scene, leading to an hours-long standoff.
The suspect then raised the firearm toward law enforcement, and that's when shots were fired at the suspect.
The suspect has been identified as 42-year-old Ricky Schiffer, who may have had ties to far-right extremist groups, including the Proud Boys. Schiffer is believed to have been in Washington in the days leading up to the January 6th, 2021 insurrection, and may have been present at the Capitol on the day of the attack. There have been growing threats in recent days against FBI agents and offices across the country since federal agents executed a search warrant at former President Donald Trump's Mar-a-Lago estate. I'm Lisa Dwyer.
The United States' top public health agency is relaxing its COVID-19 guidelines and dropping the recommendation that Americans quarantine themselves if they come into close contact with an infected person. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention also said Thursday that people no longer need to stay at least 6 feet away from others. The changes are driven by a recognition that more than 2.5 years since the start of the pandemic, an estimated 95% of Americans 16 and older have acquired some level of immunity, either from being vaccinated or infected. Former Sri Lankan President Gotabaya Rajapaksa arrived in Thailand on Thursday, according to three Reuters witnesses, as he seeks temporary shelter in a second Southeast Asian country after fleeing his island nation last month amid mass protests. Rajapaksa is expected to stay temporarily in Thailand after fleeing Sri Lanka for Singapore on July the 14th. As always, for details on much more news, we invite you to join us at our website. That is voanews.com, also on the VOA mobile app. I'm Michael Brown, reporting by remote, VOA News.
Today's Friday, August 12th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Ofor in Washington. Coming up in the next half hour, Western nations pledged more than $1.5 billion to boost Ukraine's military capabilities in its war against Russia.
Ukraine's fight is our fight. We stand together. We condemn Russia's brutal attack in the strongest possible way, and we will continue to assist Ukraine in its military needs.
Latvia's parliament designates Russia as a, quote, state sponsor of terrorism, unquote, over the war in Ukraine.
If we look at the statement by the Latvian parliament, it states that Russia is carrying out genocidal activities against the people of Ukraine.
And the U.S. Justice Department asks courts to unseal warrant used to search former President Donald Trump's residence. We'll have these stories and more next on International Edition. Stay tuned. Danish Defense Minister Morten Baatskov said Western countries on Thursday committed more than 1.5 billion euros in cash, equipment and training to boost Ukraine's military capabilities in its war against Russia. The money, which was pledged by a group of 26 countries at a conference in Copenhagen, will be used to supply existing weapons, missiles and ammunition, increase weapon production for Ukraine, train Ukrainian soldiers and demine war-torn areas in Ukraine. Baatskov said defense ministers of Poland, Slovakia and the Czech Republic signaled a willingness to expand production of artillery systems, munitions and other military equipment to Ukraine.
Today, 26 countries as well as the European Union have met here in Copenhagen and have sent a clear signal. Ukraine's fight is our fight. We stand together and we stand with Ukraine. We condemn Russia's brutal attack in the strongest possible way. And we will continue to assist Ukraine in its military needs. In total, participants today have committed more than 1.5 billion euros to the table for Ukraine.
That's Danish Defense Minister Morten Baatskov. Latvia's parliament on Thursday designated Russia as, quote, a state sponsor of terrorism, unquote, over the war in Ukraine and called on Western allies to impose more comprehensive sanctions on Moscow in order to bring an end to the conflict. More than 10.5 million Ukrainians have fled their homes and thousands have been killed since Russia's invasion in February. Moscow says it does not deliberately target civilians in what it calls its, quote, special military operation, unquote, aimed at safeguarding Russia's security and protecting Russian speakers in Ukraine. So what does this designation mean on a global stage? Flashpoint Ukraine's Steve Miller speaks with Lance Hunter, a political science professor at Augusta University, to find out.
If we look at the statement by the Latvian parliament, it states that Russia is carrying out genocidal activities against the people of Ukraine. So it takes that state sponsor of terrorism a little bit further in that instance by stating that Russia's government is carrying out genocidal activities. So from a political public relations standpoint, I think it does send a very strong message to the international community that the actions taken by Russia are terroristic. And then also, according to the Latvian parliament, there's genocide is taking place as well.
You mentioned that this creates a powerful statement on the international stage. We're talking specifically about Latvia in this case. There have been calls by individuals from Ukraine and elsewhere for the United States to take that measure. Now, if the United States Congress or President Biden were to make a statement calling Russia a state sponsor of terror, what would that mean?
Absolutely. One, I think it would add weight to the notion that Russia's activities are terroristic in nature, being the activities carried out by the Russian government and also supporting organizations, private security forces, in this instance, that may be carrying out terrorist activities as well. But in addition to the possible public relations and political ramifications of that statement, there can be some additional economic sanctions that are placed on Russia if there is that designation by the United States Department of State. So there can be political ramifications, public relations ramifications, then also economic consequences that do emerge from labeling Russia as a state sponsor of terrorism. And also that will increasingly deter many international corporations and businesses from investing in Russia or from doing business in Russia. This has been occurring already, but this would really increase the withdrawal or hesitancy of other business groups and corporations from having any involvement with Russia if that designation is placed on Russia. So it does have many real-world consequences, both politically and economically.
That's Lance Hunter, political science professor at Augusta University, speaking with Flashpoint Ukraine's Steve Miller. The U.S. Justice Department has asked a court to unseal the warrant used for this week's search of former President Donald Trump's residence in Florida. More from VOA's chief national correspondent Steve Herman in Washington.
U.S. Attorney General Merrick Garland, without going into specifics about what documents agents of the Federal Bureau of Investigation were seeking, told reporters on Thursday there was probable cause for the action and that he personally approved the decision.
The department does not take such a decision lightly. Where possible, it is standard practice to seek less intrusive means as an alternative to a search and to narrowly scope any search that is undertaken.
The Justice Department, according to Garland, filed the motion to make public the warrant and a list of what was seized in light of Trump's public confirmation of the search, the surrounding circumstance, and the substantial public interest in the matter. Garland, who spoke at the Justice Department lectern for less than 4 minutes, took no questions from reporters in the room. Media reports indicate the FBI was seeking classified documents Trump allegedly removed from the White House as he was leaving office and did not return as requested by the National Archives. Republican lawmakers have strongly criticized the search as politically motivated to thwart an expected re-election bid by Trump in 2024. The White House says it was not made aware of the federal law enforcement action, nor ordered it. Steve Herman, VOA News, Washington.
A ceasefire between Islamic Jihad and Israel seems to be holding after 3 days of heavy fighting. The latest clashes in Gaza have highlighted a problem that the 2 million Palestinians who live there continue to face. Poverty and unemployment are high, and 95% of the water is not drinkable. Linda Grandstein reports from Jerusalem.
After 3 days of heavy fighting between Israel and the Islamic Jihad movement in Gaza, a ceasefire seems to be holding. Israeli Prime Minister Yair Lapid praised the army's tactical successes, but the centrist politician also reached out directly to Gaza's 2 million Palestinians.
I want to address the residents of Gaza and tell them there is another way. We will know how to protect ourselves from anyone who threatens us. But we also know how to give work and livelihood and a life of dignity to everyone who wants to live in peace by our side.
To many Gazans, however, it was yet another Israeli assault that left more destruction and made a bad situation even worse. The Islamist Hamas movement, which controls Gaza, stayed out of the fighting this time. Palestinian analysts suggest that Hamas did not want to jeopardize the benefits they get from Israel, including passage of fuel through the checkpoints and almost 15,000 permits for Gazan workers to enter Israel. Each of these workers supports an estimated 10 people. But the ceasefire does nothing to fix endemic problems in Gaza, where two-thirds of residents live in poverty, unemployment is over 50%, and most of the population lives on United Nations food aid. Many here say that without a humanitarian solution to Gaza's problems, another round of violence is only a matter of time. Linda Gradstein for VOA News, Jerusalem.
The International Labor Organization says the COVID-19 pandemic has wreaked havoc on the youth labor market. The ILO just released, quote, global employment trends for 2022, unquote, and a report finds job prospects for young people between the ages of 15 and 24 are lagging behind other age groups. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Latest data estimate the total global number of unemployed youths will reach 73 million this year. While that is a slight improvement from 2021 levels, the ILO says the number of young people without jobs is still 6 million above the pre-pandemic level of 2019. ILO Deputy Director General Martha Newton says the COVID-19 crisis has exposed shortcomings in the way the needs of young people are being addressed. She says those least able to gain a foothold in the labor market include first-time job seekers, school dropouts, inexperienced fresh graduates, and those who remain inactive, not by choice.
Following the arrival of the pandemic in 2020, the share of young people who were neither in employment, education, or training, and we refer to them as NEETs, rose to 23.3%. reaching the highest level. We saw the youth NEET rate jump to its highest level in 15 years.
The ILO says young people have faced multidimensional crises throughout the pandemic. It says interruptions in their education and training have robbed them of the skills needed to get a job. That, it says, threatens to damage their long-term employment, education, and earning prospects. Newton says job opportunities are narrowing for many young people. She adds young women are worse off than young men in finding employment. She says the ILO projects 27.4% of young women globally are likely to be employed in 2022, compared to 40.3% of young men.
The impact of the pandemic has a feminine face. And we also know from our data that as women are not coming back into the labor force at the same rates as men, as many countries around the world, and partly ties to the care responsibilities of women.
The report finds recovery in youth unemployment is likely to be more successful in high-income countries than in low- and middle-income countries. It projects the youth unemployment rate in North America to be below world average levels at 8.3%, compared to an unemployment rate of 20.5% in Latin America this year. While youth unemployment stands at 12.7% in Africa, the report says that figure masks the fact that many young people in Africa have chosen to withdraw from the labor market. The ILO cites the Arab states as the region with the highest and fastest growing youth unemployment rate in the world. It says the situation for women is particularly bad. The report notes that 42.5% of unemployment rate for young women in the region is nearly three times higher than the global average for young women. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
In other news, a senior Indian army official said on Thursday that security forces killed three militants belonging to Pakistani-based Lashkar-e-Taiba militant group as they were planning an attack in the restive region on Independence Day. Indian army official Brigadier VJS Birdi said he died in a joint operation conducted by the Indian Army, Jammu and Kashmir Police, paramilitary and border security forces. For more on this story and other breaking news, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Remember to connect with us on social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Search for VOA Africa. You're listening to VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Afo in Washington. U.S. Secretary of State Anthony Blinken says Rwanda and the DRC have agreed to begin talks to ease the tension over fighting in eastern Congo. Blinken, speaking in Rwanda Thursday, said he has also raised human rights concerns about the detention of U.S. permanent resident Paul Rusesabagina. Senanu Todd reports from Kigali.
U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken said Thursday the presidents of Rwanda and Democratic Republic of Congo, Paul Kagame and Felix Tshisekedi respectively, have agreed to open direct communications aimed at ending the ongoing tensions in the eastern Congo. The two leaders have accused each other of supporting rebel groups in the chronically volatile region. Blinken, in his address, warned that supporting and cooperating with armed groups will endanger local communities and threaten Central Africa's stability. He urged the two groups to be respectful of each other's territory. Blinken said both Kagame and Tshisekedi welcomed the United States' support and committed to begin processes towards achieving stability.
Both presidents have agreed to engage in direct talks with each other. They're both ready to resume the talks in the context of the Nairobi process with armed groups, and both welcome the continued U.S. engagement in support of African-led mediation efforts.
The Nairobi process was an initiative by the outgoing president of Kenya, Uhuru Kenyatta, that brought the heads of state of East African countries together to find lasting solutions to the disturbances in eastern Congo. Blinken also addressed issues surrounding Rwanda's detention of U.S. permanent resident Paul Rusesabagina, who is credited with saving hundreds of people during Rwanda's 1994 genocide and inspired the film Hotel Rwanda. He said he expressed his candid views to Kagame and will continue to engage on the matter.
We have been clear about our concerns related to Paul Rusesabagina's trial and conviction, particularly the lack of fair trial guarantees. We continue to urge the government to address concerns about the legal protections afforded to him in this case and establish safeguards to prevent similar outcomes in the future.
Rusesabagina was taken to Rwanda under false pretenses in 2020 and sentenced to 25 years in prison on terrorism charges last year. Rwandan Foreign Minister Vincent Biruta said Thursday the government has broken no laws.
This was done lawfully under both Rwandan and international laws. Therefore, Rwanda will continue to abide by our laws and the decisions made by our judiciary, and we would request our partners to respect Rwanda's sovereignty, Rwanda's laws, and its institutions.
Blinken emphasized the U.S. commitments to be equal partners with Rwanda in advancing shared priorities, tackling global challenges, and bettering the condition of the country's citizens. Sena Anutod for VOA News, Kigali, Rwanda.
Australian and other scientists are warning that runaway climate change could melt the East Antarctica ice sheet, causing sea levels to rise up to 5 meters. The research is published Thursday in the journal Nature. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
The report by Australian and international researchers is another stark warning about what could happen if targets to limit temperature increases under the 2015 Paris Agreement aren't met. The study suggests that the melting of the world's biggest ice sheet in East Antarctic could eventually cause dramatic sea level rises, but that could be avoided by swift action to address climate change. The East Antarctic ice sheet holds the vast majority of world glacier ice. Researchers describe it as a sleeping giant that shouldn't be woken because of the monumental impact its melted ice could have on sea levels. The ice shelf was thought to be stable and much less susceptible to global warming compared to the ice sheet in West Antarctica or Greenland. However, scientists believe it's now showing unmistakable signs of vulnerability to a shifting climate, and a loss of ice has been identified. Study co-author Neralee Abram, a professor at the Australian National University's Research School of Earth Sciences, says the melting of the East Antarctic ice sheet could eventually be catastrophic.
By 2500, East Antarctica could contribute up to 5 metres of sea level on top of the sea level rise that we will have already had from Greenland and West Antarctica as well. So that's really a scenario that would have huge global implications, and it gives us even more of a reason to make sure that we are doing everything that we can to not exceed that 2 degree warming level.
Researchers say adhering to the climate target set in the French capital in 2015 is fundamental. The Paris Agreement brought together almost all the world's nations for the first time in a single accord to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. The study asserts that if temperature rise is limited to 2 degrees Celsius, the vast East Antarctic ice sheet should remain stable. But it warns that warmer temperatures could cause melting and increase the sea level by many meters. In the best-case scenario, under restricted temperature increases, the ice sheet could actually gain more ice from snowfall than it loses. The study is published Thursday in the journal Nature. Those involved included the Australian National University, the Australian Centre for Excellence in Antarctic Science, and other experts from Britain, the United States and France. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
This is Science in a Minute.
Scientists reported that the red supergiant star Betelgeuse dimmed twice in brightness between October 2019 and February 2020, sparking rumors that the star was getting ready to explode into a huge supernova. Later observations suggested the dimming may have been due to it ejecting a vast amount of dust into the space surrounding the star, obscuring its visibility. New research provides evidence that in 2019, the red supergiant forced out a vast amount of its visible surface in what is called a surface mass ejection, or SME. Scientists found that the Betelgeuse SME blew off 400 billion times more mass than a typical coronal mass ejection. They add that the star continues to recover from its cataclysmic disturbance and, despite losing a large portion of its surface, is not indicative of an imminent supernova. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Hi, I'm Kim Lewis.
Join me and our panel of journalists as we discuss the top stories of the week, including reaction to the FBI executing an unprecedented court-authorized search of former President Donald Trump's home, sparking an escalation of tensions between the former president and those investigating him for alleged wrongdoing. Join us for Issues in the News this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
And to all our VOA listeners, please note we have moved our programs to a new website, voaafrica.com, from voanews.com. There you will find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. Find us on voaafrica.com, and thanks for listening. This has been International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours a day at voaafrica.com. Until next time, I am Chinedu Afo in Washington. Have a great weekend.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
On November 20, 2020, Burma's National League for Democracy Party, or NLD, won an overwhelming majority of votes in the national election. Less than 3 months later, the Burmese military seized control of Burma's government and detained the country's leaders, including State Councillor Aung San Suu Kyi and President Win Myint, as well as members of their political party. The regime launched the coup on February 1, 2021, as the newly elected parliament was preparing for its initial session. The regime used lethal force to suppress protests throughout the country. According to the NGO Assistance Association for Political Prisoners, Burmese security forces killed over 2,000 people and arbitrarily arrested over 14,000. The military also expanded abusive operations in ethnic minority areas, displacing more than 750,000 people. In an attempt to stop the bloodshed, leaders of the nine other ASEAN countries met with Burma's military commander-in-chief, General Min Aung Hlaing. They prevailed upon him to agree to the five-point consensus by which the Burmese military regime agreed to end the violence in Burma, to hold dialogue among all parties, to accept the appointment of a special envoy, to accept humanitarian assistance by ASEAN, and to allow the special envoy to meet with all parties. Unfortunately, the agreement changed nothing, as the military regime has consistently failed to uphold its commitments. It's unfortunately safe to say that we've seen no more positive movement, said Secretary of State Antony Blinken.
We continue to see the repression of the Burmese people. We continue to see violence perpetrated on them by the regime. We continue to see virtually the entire opposition in jail or in exile. And we continue to see a terrible humanitarian situation, exacerbated by the fact that the regime is not delivering what's necessary for the people.
We will continue to look for ways that we and other countries can effectively put pressure on the regime to move back to the democratic path, said Secretary Blinken.
Regional support for the regime's adherence to the five-point consensus developed by ASEAN is critical. All of the ASEAN countries need to continue to demand an immediate cessation of violence, the release of political prisoners, and a restoration of Burma's democratic path.
All countries have to continue to speak clearly about what the regime is doing in its ongoing repression and brutality, said Secretary Blinken. We have an obligation to the people of Burma to hold the regime accountable.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.